Hello and welcome to I Want to Grow. And I Want to Grow is all about that, right? It's about our growth. But as you know, it's with our guests, it's not about their growth. It's about them helping others grow. And today I've got a guest, a very special guest, all the way from New York. New York! Come specially to have a podcast with us. Ari, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. Introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
Steve, it's such an honor to be here. I'm a big fan of the show, and thank you so much for having me. And to all the listeners out there, I'm incredibly honored to be here. But my name is Ari Matityahu. As you said, I'm from New York, New York City, and I've been in the region for almost about 10 years.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I looked because I with my guests, I want it to be but we've been talking to each other on LinkedIn and and WhatsApp. But I always said to you, I don't want to know too much about you because I want that to all come to fruition when it comes to the podcast. But you are doing some special, special things.
Yeah. Thank you. I am so lucky. I get to wake up every day and do what I love, right? Creating a life, not just a living. So, you know, it all started, it's funny enough, it all started many years ago. I didn't think I was even going to be an entrepreneur in the business world or even traveling to the Middle East. I grew up, I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to teach. I wanted to teach middle school subjects. I wanted to be that, that role model for kids in sixth to eighth grade. Totally different mindset, totally different path than what I'm doing now. So it's been such an incredible ride, you know, the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, but it all started because I wanted to be a teacher.
But that's what you are now, right? You empower people. You show people how they can. I see that you're founders and chairman of so many different companies in Saudi Arabia, just Saudi Arabia alone.
That's right. That's right.
That's what you are. You're a teacher. And with all your entrepreneurship and the way that you're showing people and guiding people and encouraging people and empowering people. It's incredible.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to hear that. But it's been such a really an incredible ride. And if I get to help other people take that step to become an entrepreneur or start that business or tweak their business and watch them grow, it's the best feeling in the world. That's why I love your show so much, right? It's in the I want to grow is really we want to grow.
Yeah, we want to grow. Now, I'm going to take you back a little bit. So you said that you wanted to be a teacher.
That's right.
When did all of a sudden your path started going away from? I won't say it because I think you're still a teacher now.
That's true. I'll never. You can take me out of the classroom, right? But you can't take the classroom out of me or the you know what teachers do. That's so spot on. It's just a different type of teaching, right? It's a different classroom. So I feel like I'm teaching more in like the school of hard knocks than I am in an official middle school in New York. But, you know, I taught for really just a few years. And then it's kind of silly, but at the time I was a young teacher. I was getting married real young and I wanted to support my family. And I remember, you know, back in the day, I'm not so old, but the administrator would come around on payday and give each of the teachers and staff their paycheck. And I didn't have like a direct deposit, which we have now. And I remember getting my direct deposit and putting it in my bag. And when the school bell rang and all the kids left, I walked to my car and I sat in my car. And before I turned the key to turn on the car, I opened my paycheck and I looked at it. And for whatever reason, I studied it. In the past, I'd open it, say, great, that's how much money I have, put it in my bag and drive home. But for some reason on that day, I really studied it. I looked at it and I was like, wow. This is rough.
Yeah.
I want bigger things. I have great ideas. I love what I do. But I couldn't look at it in the same way. That was my turning point.
I love what you say about you love what you do, but you just realized it wasn't enough. And it's okay to tell ourselves whatever we're doing, it's not enough. I want to go on into bigger and better things. And sometimes we have this imposter syndrome and think to ourselves, but it's okay to think that you can go and achieve so much more.
You know, I agree with you now, but at the time, I really struggled with it. I struggled with, I really love what I do, but I wanted something a little bit more. I wanted more security. I wanted more stability. And I wanted to get married to the girl I was dating at the time, my girlfriend. And I remember sitting down with her parents just a few weeks later. And I looked them in the eye and I said, I love your daughter and I really want to get married to her. Can I have your blessing? And my future father-in-law at the time turned to me and said, aren't you a camp counselor? And I said, no, I'm a teacher. And he says, we love you and we love teachers and we love what you do. We want something more. We want something bigger for our daughter. And at that time, I was young. I was, you know, really like 21, 22 years old. And I wanted something bigger too. I wanted to create and build. So I pivoted from teaching to business.
Yeah. But was that a bit of a, that could have been had an adverse effect on you, because that could have been, that really could have been a big knock, and it could have knocked you when you realized that you weren't as big as they thought.
Yeah, but look, absolutely. You know, looking back at it, when you're in your 20s, right, you're still figuring your life out. You're still figuring out your trajectory. You're figuring out kind of that next chapter, right, after you study in university, after you move out of your parents' home, after you kind of, that's when you get into the real world, and the real world's gonna toss you around a little bit. Not physically, maybe a little physically, but emotionally and mentally. So when I look back on it, it was the journey I needed to have. The events needed to play out. I didn't know it at the time. So, you know, it could have knocked me down, but it actually fueled me to be bigger and better. And I knew that I was creative. I knew I was an entrepreneur. I knew I had it in me to build something. And I did. I left and built something that taught me one of the biggest lessons in entrepreneurship.
But just go through some of the things that you're involved in right now, because it's staggering what you've done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I'm so blessed. I've been in the region now about almost like 10 years. Most of that time was working with a company, which I think your viewers and everyone would know, which is WeWork, the global office, co-office sharing company. And at the time, you know, we were so massive, and the Middle East was actually a part of the world where we had no presence in. And I was talking with the co-founders, and they're like, Ari, we gotta go. We gotta go there. Here's a one-way ticket to the Middle East. And I remember it was so unknown to me. I was like, the Middle East? I can't go to the Middle East. What are you talking about? They're like, yeah, we're going to go. We're going to figure this out. Here's a one-way ticket. Don't come back till you achieve the goal. So I called my wife and I was like, honey, I'm going to the Middle East. Where in the Middle East? Saudi Arabia. That was the first time I've been to the real Middle East. And I feel though, Steve, as I'm still on that one-way ticket, I feel like I haven't even returned. Although I go back and forth between the U.S., and the Middle East, and in Saudi, but a lot of my time was spent building WeWork and building out that infrastructure. And after I left WeWork around, 5, 6 years ago, I had a choice to make. Do I stay in a region that is filled with opportunity, filled with growth, filled with energy? And they need help kind of directing that energy and managing that energy to produce the amazing things that they're doing now in line with Vision 2030? Or do I go home and build something else? And as I was going back to the airport for my last time, it hit me. I had to stay. I had to build. I had to invest. I had to grow here, locally. So I went home and I said to my wife, babe, we're not done. We're not done with this region yet. And I would travel back and forth every few weeks till today. I spend about 3 weeks here, about 3 weeks in the States, and I've never looked back.
You've seen some pretty big changes. If the, as you said, you've been in the Middle East in Saudi Arabia for 10 years, so you've seen a huge transformation in just Riyadh in.
Yes, I mean, I have seen, I've seen it when it was really, well, what they or we all call closed, and I've seen it when it's been open. One of my favorite stories to tell was I was in the kingdom the day that the big movie theater opened in Saudi, and it's a great trivia question. Do you know or do you remember the first movie ever played in Saudi Arabia?
I do not.
So it was the Black Panther movie.
Okay.
And it was played first movie in Saudi in King Abdullah Financial District. And I was there and I remember driving up and there was a big ceremony and you had all the royal family, you had dignitaries, you had people filling the auditorium where they popped up this movie theater. And I remember sitting, I think it was like maybe 5 or 6 rows behind the dignitaries, and the movie came on and people were cheering and the energy was so infectious. And I remember not watching the movie at all. If you ask me what happened, I have no idea what happened in that movie. I was watching the people. I was watching their reactions, the smiles on kids' faces, the excitement that the people had for watching a kind of a make-believe movie. But it wasn't the movie that was exciting, at least not for me. It was the fact that that was this first step among many, but that was really the first step that materialized into being open and inviting. And the energy in that room, even though they were quiet, you could hear a pin drop because they were watching that movie and I was watching them. You could hear and feel the excitement in that kingdom. And that's when I realized I made the right choice.
But at that time, it kind of that was a big choice.
Yeah.
That was a
It was a big bet. It's a big
a
bet.
big bet.
Yeah.
So you were working with WeWork, and then all of a sudden, when was that? When did you build up a relationship with different people then? How did it go on from? Because you're, as I said, chairman, CEOs of so many different companies in Saudi Arabia right now.
It's that's true. Most of them are homegrown and incubated companies.
Okay.
So, what happened after my WeWork days was I started really seeing opportunities within different sectors of the kingdom. I remember everyone's vision, no matter if you're an expat or you're a local, that vision is Vision 2030. That is MBS, Mohammed bin Salman's vision for the kingdom, propelling them onto a massive global stage and saying Saudi is here not only to stay but to thrive.
Right.
Saudi is here to grow. Saudi is here to lead.
Yeah.
And anyone who wants to join us on that rocket ship, you better come now, because once that rocket ship starts, it's hard to jump on.
Yeah. And I keep on saying that you've got to keep your foot on the pedal. If you take it off at any stage and think to yourself, I'll step
Correct.
back a little, it's so difficult to put that foot back down.
It
So
is, yeah.
the energy. Let's talk about the Middle East in general.
Sure.
There is a shift that's happening, whether that is to do with the oil and gas, and they've got the benefits of that. They really are going into different sectors,
Yeah, absolutely.
and they're really attracting some. They've got a potential of bringing some of the best minds from around the world into their country to knowledge share.
That's right.
It's only a matter of time before all of a sudden the focus is going to be on this area, or is it already?
I think it definitely already is. I mean, you'll definitely see and hear people want to come into this region, and they're still very excited about the growth. But there's still a lot of education the world needs to have about this region. Many years ago, it was the Saudis or the Emiratis or the Qataris or wherever. If you're a G from the GCC, you've got money. And they'll open up their purse strings. We just have to go and convince them that we're going to give them great returns. We're gonna take their money, bring it back to the US or bring it back to Europe, and we're gonna invest in the things we want to invest in. We'll use their money. We'll give them great returns. That was the playbook years ago. And for some, they made good money. For others, they didn't. But there was no vision. There was no mandate. There was no North Star. Now, this region has that. So it's about educating the global community on the opportunities here locally. I get calls all the time, Steve, for people who say, Ari, we have a fund and we love to do business in the Middle East. Wonderful. Yalla. Marhaba. Welcome. Do business here. No, we need your help raising money. I say, I'm sorry. I don't do that. It's not the time. It's not the culture anymore. If people want to invest locally, come. There's great opportunity here across all the sectors. But if people don't want to come back and forth, they don't want to invest the time, they don't want to invest their money. It's going to take money to make money here. It's no freebies, no handouts. If you can invest your time, you can invest your money. And if you can really invest locally, you'll do very well in the region, not just Saudi. Any of the other
Any of
GCC
the other.
countries.
Yeah, you're correct. You're 100%.
But it's that mindset, Steve, that I think the global community still needs a little help with.
I've seen some, we've helped hundreds of companies come here to establish. And some companies that are doing very well back in the UK, one for that springs to mind, they got a 30 million turnover in the UK, doing extremely well, but they come to Qatar and they struggled. Because they didn't understand. They didn't understand, put some skin in the game.
Right.
Everybody wanted to just fill their pockets. And you tend to, and that's the business side of things. They want to make this a success from a business perspective, but they just don't get it. They don't realize what they have to do. And I go back to that. They don't realize the skin they have to put in the game.
That's right.
And the knowledge sharing, and it's not just about coming here and providing your expertise and knowledge.
That's right.
It's also about them interacting with the local community.
That's an excellent point. I break it down into steps, right? And kind of checkpoints on how to be really successful in this region. And again, it's going to take your time, right? Even for me, FaceTime is the biggest form or the best form of currency in this region. It's not gold, it's not rials, it's not silver, it's FaceTime. The more FaceTime you can have here, the more in-person interactions you can have, the more local interactions you have, that's the best form of currency here. So it's not just enough to open an entity here, but you have to come back, you have to be present, and you have to be local, you have to be in the region. And you mentioned something so beautiful. The Middle East today is a totally different beast. It's not like Singapore or UK or New York, where business is the culture. Here in the Middle East, the culture influences the business. They stay true to their culture. And they've also stayed true to the lessons that they've learned since the beginning. They first struck oil, and they were all of a sudden met with this incredible amount of wealth and now attention. They've stayed true to their historical roots. And if you understand that and you meet them in their majlis, if you meet them in the desert, if you meet them for a cup of coffee and you listen and you learn, seems so simple, Steve. Listen and learning, it seems so
But it
simple.
is that easy, right?
That's the first step. But it takes time.
Yeah.
Building trust, building friendships, building a real connection takes time. And it takes even more time in the Middle East. So, if I could guide any one of your listeners, right? It's going to take time. But I promise, if you put in the time and you put in the work and you put in that attention, you'll reap the reward. You will.
And I told you that I've helped lots of companies come here to establish, and over the period of years, we're all looking at what those other countries in the regions are doing and what's our unique selling points here. And is it cheaper in this free zone or this one? Not so much cheaper, but is there more advantages in the different places and where should I go? But it comes back to, it always for me comes back to one. I know that there's a business aspect of it, but it comes back to the quality of life.
Sure.
People just don't understand the quality of life here in Qatar, but also in other places in the region.
Yes.
Where it's just perfect. The schooling, the kind of, you look at Dubai and see what they're doing there with the education, and especially here in Qatar, education, medical, every industry is booming, but it comes back to the quality of life is so great. It's so good to be able to go and do business because you don't have those distractions of everything else that's going on around you.
Well, that's true. I haven't met anyone yet, expat or local, that hasn't brought up quality of life. It's a main pillar. Take Saudi for an example, right? They have part of their vision realization program. Right. They have Vision 2030 and how to achieve Vision 2030. They have all of these vision realization programs to help them realize their vision. And one of those programs, which is, it's funny you mentioned that because it's one of my favorite programs, is quality of life. It's a quality of life department, like a semi-government. And their job is to make sure that everything they do benefits and enhances the quality of life in Saudi. When I first heard that, I was like, well, what's a quality of life? What does that even mean?
Yeah.
I'm from America. I thought I had great quality of life. And I do. Very blessed for my life in America and what that means locally, domestically, internationally. But we don't have a department of quality of life or a secretary of quality of life in America. What does that mean here? And as I started to learn about the different realization programs, I always kept focusing on quality of life because it means so much to them. It's not about global power. It's not really about this international bridge building, which this region and the kingdom, both of Qatar, Bahrain, the UAE, Oman, Saudi, Kuwait, all of those GCC countries are doing a great job in their own respective right. But quality of life has really been at the forefront of all of their country visions.
Yeah.
It's really great to see.
And there is so many benefits from companies around the world that can come here and in some respect lead the way. And there's so much space in there. If you can come here, if you can engage with the culture, engage with the people, you've got the opportunity of building something pretty special in this region.
I agree with you. You know, one of the first steps before someone says, I want to open up an office in the GCC, I always say, well, hold on, my friend. Come for a visit. Drive around. But I don't have any meetings, Ari. I want to use my time really effectively, and I want to pack and stack my calendar. Can you help me get all these meetings with top people? And I was like, one second, hold on. Sure, I can help you get meetings with top people and decision makers. You're missing my point. Come first. Drive around. Interact. Sit in the coffee shop. Say hello to someone. Breathe the air. Walk around the different neighborhoods. I always recommend that to people. And 9 out of 10 times, they'll call me up afterwards and they'll say, that was amazing. You were right. It wasn't going in strong. That attitude won't work here in this region. But if you come in, shwaya shwaya, you come in, breathe in the air, if it's a good air quality day, you'll start to, it will change your mindset. You'll start to see a shift.
I got one of my sayings where when I see youngsters or I see sometimes companies, and they're so busy tied into things, I say, hey, when was the last time you heard the bird sing? And they're looking at me strange. And I said, when was the last time you were able to take time out of your day to listen to those beautiful things? And it's a metaphor, of course.
Yes.
But it's a metaphor to look up and say, what things have you got around you that you just are not looking at, you're not considering? And that's what I say to people. And they say, yeah, you know, something is pretty good.
I mean, I for one can totally need to take that advice. You know, I'm still energetic. I'm still running around at like 80 miles an hour. But you're right. You know, sometimes it's good to kind of just take a beat, take a breath, understand your surroundings, and it gives you that clarity.
Yeah,
it does give you that clarity.
I had a mentorship. I had a mentee. She was 24 years old. Got married early.
Yeah.
She was from Pakistan, and her father, a little bit similar story, but her father didn't like the person that she'd chosen to get married to. And she tells me the story about how she'd done a PowerPoint to explain to him that this is the right person that she wants to marry. So that was the first thing. So, and then she was so concerned about the world, 24 years old, so concerned about the world spinning around her. And I looked up to her and said, and my first session I said with her was, when was the last time you heard the bird singing? And she said, I can't remember. And then as it went, we did a video, and she looks up and she says, I can't believe the difference that this has made just in this small thing. Because now when I'm going from my class to go to the mosque, to the prayer room, I've got that space where I can listen to the birds sing. My journey starts there. When I go outside the classroom, I can start talking to him already, listening to the things that's been created by him. And she was just saying it's just changed the world to a certain degree. And I think sometimes we just need that help.
Absolutely.
In saying that, you've obviously got a secret sauce. Now, I don't want to go into so much details. You've got a superpower. You have got a superpower, because I've seen you just for a couple of days since you've been here in Qatar, and you really have helped me consider what I'm doing wrong or the things that I can improve on. You've got a secret sauce. What are you doing, and how did you start? What kind of advice did you give to people in those early days until now? How are you getting those successes that you're doing?
Yeah, thank you so much for the confidence. You know, I know I definitely have a secret sauce. And by the way, everyone has that
superpower. Everybody.
Everyone has a secret sauce. You know, I love that you use the word superpower, because, you know, when I was at the days of WeWork, that's actually when I heard this term superpower. And I always thought the superpower was just like Superman or a superhero. But actually, everyone on Earth has a superpower, something that they're really good at, something that they were born with. And it could be talking to people. It could be, if you're an engineer or you're incredibly smart with now AI or computer, everyone has that secret sauce. And what I love to do is kind of help those people who reach out to me, elevate their secret sauce, kind of tap into it, their superpower. And it's not easy. It might sound so silly or sound so easy to do. It's not. I didn't develop my secret power or superpower until very late in my 20s. But when I finally realized that I'm good at X, Y, and Z, everything else was noise. And I focused on the things that I'm really, really good at. And all the other things that I could be good at, but it doesn't bring me joy, it doesn't bring me energy, I outsource. I focus on the things that I know I could do really well. And it's really hard. And Steve, you and I have had this conversation, right? It's so hard to just focus on your superpower.
It's having that belief, right? Because yes. Because you start on something and then all of a sudden you're thinking, am I going in the right direction? And then you're looking from side to side thinking, did I miss something in one of those pots? Is there some gold in there? Did I miss that? You've just got to stay on that path, right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, I pivoted a lot what I was doing here in the Middle East, and I was trying to find, you know, after I left WeWork and I wanted to stay in this region, I remember trying to find the perfect startup, because I came from that startup world. And by the way, before WeWork, I was an entrepreneur. I had different ideas, I had different startups, Maybe some of them were successful in their own right. Most of them were total fails, failures. And a life of an entrepreneur is it ebbs and flows. There were some years where I was riding the rocket ship, riding the wave. And there were other years where I was just, the wave just crashed me into the rocks. And I have had ups and downs, and I've been tested, and I've been pushed, and I've been times where I'm crying on the floor because I had no more money in my savings account. Like, you hear that classic story of like the founder who put all, mortgaged their home and sold their belongings and lived out of their van. And, before I experienced those things, I always was like, oh, that doesn't make sense. That's he's he or she is exaggerating. But being a life of an entrepreneur, being an entrepreneur and making it your life's mission, not just a chapter in your life, but your life's mission, is incredibly difficult.
Incredibly
Incredibly difficult.
lonely, scary.
Yeah, sure. And you feel like no one understands what you go through. Even if you're part of a club and a group and an investing group or an entrepreneur group or a cohort, or you feel incredibly, incredibly vulnerable and alone, isolated. And thank God I had a great network of people. But even then, it was a hustle and a push every single day.
And how do you channel that, all that energy that you've, because I with all of my guests, it's when you talk to them, and I can see exactly the thing with you right now. You kind of go through those hardships and you look back at those hardships, and then all of a sudden you start feeling good about what you've achieved and what you're doing. What advice would you give to those with everything that you've learned, and you've built some really great stuff, and you've been down there where you've had to borrow, beg. How, what advice would you give to an entrepreneur? Because this is one thing that I've loved with you the last couple of days. What advice would you give to them, those ones that are feeling in that place right now? What's the best advice?
If you really believe in what you're doing, and I'm not talking about the product or the service you're building, because sometimes topics or projects, they just don't work out. Totally realize that. But I knew I could never have a 9-to-5 job. I could never go back to working for someone. And there were many times where I was like, maybe I'll just go back to teaching. And I love teaching. I loved it. I loved the environment. I loved everything about it. But I didn't. Even when there was a time where I had $3,000 in my bank account, no savings, newly married, and my rent was $1,500. I had 1 month of runway left. And I was like, I gotta get something. I gotta do something. But instead of going back and leaving this life that I knew so desperately and deep down inside, I knew this was my life, don't give up. So if anyone here who's going through that, but they believe in what they're doing, they are an entrepreneur, they want to fight and claw their way out of it, don't give up. Keep going. Reach out.
That's the hardest part, though, reaching out. You don't want to sell somebody your weaknesses.
I think you're right. Back in a few years ago, I think you were totally right. I have found so many people reach out to me via LinkedIn, email, text message, WhatsApp. I make it a point every day before I go to sleep to do three things. I will always reach out and respond to anyone and everyone who messages me on LinkedIn. I will always respond to someone if they text me, and I will always respond to someone before I go to sleep to an email. That is a rule of mind that I have. I don't care if I have an early day tomorrow and I need a full 8 hours of sleep. I will always respond to people that reach out. Why? Because when I was in my darkest moment and I was struggling and I didn't have, I've had poor partners, I've had people steal, I've had, startups just crash and burn before they even get a chance. When I was in my most darkest time as an entrepreneur, I sent cold emails. I sent text message. I used my network. But the amount of times that people responded to me, I can count on one hand. And I knew I never wanted to have another entrepreneur or someone who wants to be an entrepreneur, feels it in their bones, but is working a job, and they reach out for just a cup of coffee or an email or advice. So I always make sure that I will respond to someone. And that's such a great lesson to teach anyone, not just entrepreneurs. Be responsive.
You've got,
Be responsive.
I tend to find sometimes that you can be a little bit selfish. And I think I've found myself not so much selfish, but you want to value the time that you've got. So with you saying about the three things, I try to respond to everybody, but you get to where it becomes overwhelming. And people don't realize just how much it takes to be able to respond to people. I hate WhatsApp because I just miss all the if it goes down to a certain, you've missed them. And I've taken lessons from you today. Maybe I'm going to do it. Not maybe. I'm going to start doing that because I need to get back to the people that do matter. And I do honestly believe that they do matter. And you never know when your story, your legacy is going to change. You talk about your education. I think you needed to learn that so that you could go on and do the things that you're doing right now.
I love taking time out of my day to help another entrepreneur. And it's not because I want equity or I want a retainer, or I just know what it's like. I know what it's like when someone is, before they click send, before they send you that text message, that email, that LinkedIn message, I know what it's like to sit on the other side of that computer screen and rewrite that message and have anxiety and be really scared. What if they don't respond? What if they're mean? What if they're not what they portray on their social media? Like, what if, what if, what if? And I remember that anxiety. Just being responsive to someone, I can tell you is so refreshing.
You are incredible, and I'll tell you why, because I'm going to tell everybody now why. Because I must admit, I looked at it and go, what does this guy want from me? I'm doing okay. I'm creating a legacy. I'm doing, because I think we're all entitled to build some type of legacy.
Sure.
But I want more. I want more. I want to achieve more. I want to help more. I remember coming here in 17 years ago, and I remember falling over, crashing and burning, sometimes locking the door of the room, the deadbolt, so that people couldn't kind of chuck us out, running downstairs because I got somebody that was helping. We were in a terrible mess. And then at the 4 month period, I looked up and I said, right, I'm going to build business startup Qatar. I'm going to try to build this so that people didn't have to make the same mistakes that we made. And that's been our journey. Now we've got business startup Qatar, business startup Oman, business startup Saudi Arabia. I need to do more. I need to do more. And again, going back to the things that I want to say to people is that you do exactly what you're saying, because you never let me, you always got in contact with me. You always looked up and said, Steve, how are you doing? Because I was in one of those places that you said where I used to struggle press send. I remember spending some time with you yesterday. I think it was yesterday or the day before. And I told you stuff that really I felt in you idiot. I went away thinking, you
Oh,
absolute
no.
idiot. Why would you let all your tell him everything that you've got, good or bad?
Sure.
Because you were somebody that was looking at me and possibly guiding me to what, and but I was telling you everything. And that's what I feel at the time. I thought to myself that I said too much, but now I feel, I'm glad I got that off my chest. I'm glad, and I
I'm
was
so
glad.
honored that you're sharing that. I didn't for 1 minute think when we were talking, I didn't think that oh my God, this guy's divulging way too much, and I got him where I want him, and you know we're gonna squeeze him, and no.
But that's sometimes the world that you live in, right? And
It is, it's unfortunate.
I'm glad. And I know you being on this podcast is just absolutely fantastic, because you are the ideal guest. Because this is all about not just about growth, your growth, about helping others grow, but it's also it's also letting people know that it's okay. You're not on your own. You are on your own, but you can get through this. And your words of wisdom is just absolutely fantastic.
You know, I really am so, I mean, that's so kind of you to say. Thank you. And I really am. I'm on my own path, right? Everyone's on a path and a journey, and it might seem really cool now, and there are going to be hurdles throughout everyone's journey. Don't give up. Keep going. Plow through those hurdles. And we did, and now, you know, I founded WAFA, WAFA Global, is the company that I founded in KSA and Bahrain and the UAE, inshallah, in Qatar. You know, and we now have that niche, and we've plowed through all of our roadblocks to a point where what we're doing at WAFA is identifying, most people would call them problems, I'm identifying opportunities. So instead of bringing companies from outside, we're incubating the solution locally. I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I'm telling people, hey, there's an opportunity here, you know, invest locally. And it wasn't, you know, for a few years after I created WAFA, where I was like, wait, one second, why are we not doing this? Why aren't we putting our ideas and resources and capital into building the solution locally? And today we're in about 6 different sectors, projects. I think we have about 13 different projects going on throughout the GCC, and they're real meaningful projects. And it's a whole range of, you know, real estate or prop tech or venture, healthcare, hospitality. You know, we're even starting something in the space sector, which I won't go into now. But when you're immersed in this culture and you're immersed in this environment, you start to see the different areas of opportunity. And if anyone can be, anyone out there who is not yet an entrepreneur but wants to be an entrepreneur, everyone can be an entrepreneur. Right, different levels of entrepreneur. But everyone can do it. If you can do things that are nimble, if you can be nimble, you can see a problem, even if you don't know every ingredient of the solution. But if you can see and identify a problem, and you can kind of put together somewhat of a solution, right? And you're nimble, you're quick, you can be an entrepreneur, not just in the GCC, anywhere.
The big thing that you've got is when you're talking about entrepreneurs, the beginning, you're also dealing with big companies too.
Correct,
right?
Yeah.
And I love the way that you can, I always say the fundamentals in business stay the same. It's just that with different industries, different sectors, they will change. It
yes.
looks like your fundamentals stay the same. You want to guide and support individuals to get to that next level.
Yes.
Whatever size.
Yes, correct.
With entrepreneurs, and I know that I asked you one thing, but I want for them to realize that you said that they've just got to believe. What are those key things with, how do you think you can best help an entrepreneur in the very beginning? What do you look at that entrepreneur and say, I'm going to help you with, or you just look up and say, with me, I like to grow them. I'd like to get their mind right first.
Right. I mean, that's really, you answer the question, right? It is the mindset. You know, I think there was one time, right? We were walking around, right? And we bumped into an entrepreneur together. And do you remember what we did, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We said hello. And I immediately started asking questions, and they're basic level questions. And that's what I do when I meet any entrepreneur who has an idea, who has, or has an established business. I will ask them a series of questions, kind of one after another. And I want to test them. I want to see how well they can answer, not just how well they can answer questions. How much thought have they given their idea, their business, their solution? And that's the kind of the first thing I do whenever I meet an entrepreneur is I want to test how much they've thought about it. If they're, and the people say, well, if you're not eat, sleeping and breathing your solution, you're not an entrepreneur. That's not necessarily true, but you got to give it some thought. You got to be able to answer the basic questions of business, how your business works, What's your secret sauce? What are you doing differently? How are you driving traffic, or how are you driving customers, or how are you providing your service? To start with the basic questions. And that's what I do every time I meet any entrepreneur. People listening here, if you have an idea, or you have a solution, you have a service, write down, and with the age of AI, right? You can go into ChatGPT and say, hey, ChatGPT, this is what I'm doing. Ask me 15, 20 questions about my business. Answer them, right? In the world of AI, it's very easy to have someone kind of challenge you. So that's really the first thing. Get your mindset right. Ask yourself those questions. You'll be surprised what will transpire from just that exercise.
I remember. Do you remember that there's two bits of advice you gave me. One was having a structure. Steve, you need to get a structure in place. You need to get some type of structure in place. And the other one was you need a chief operating officer.
You do, yes.
You need
But
to,
do you know why I said that? Do you remember why?
yeah, because they would, I it would be able to, for me to go off and do the things that I love.
Because it will catapult your superpower. And at certain stages of a business, right, the owner does everything. And it's kind of the evolution of it's the evolution of a startup, right? You're a jack of all trades. You are wearing every hat. But at a certain point, you have to identify the things that you love to do, things that will bring you joy, and things that are not relevant to that mission. Outsource it. Get someone in there. Get a good, strong right hand. Easier said than done. There's a whole process of finding a right partner, finding a right chief of staff, or trying to find a second in command. I've been totally burned by bad partners, people stealing money from me. I've experienced it all. Like, the school of hard knocks is probably the best education that I've ever gotten. But that's, yeah, you're correct. I mean, that's the I do remember our conversation.
Yeah, and it's with me because I'm also listening to an audiobook at the moment, which is How, Not Why. I think it was Dan Kennett. I'm not sure who it was, but it was finding who can help your business, finding the person that specializes in that area.
You know, there's a it's just such a famous entrepreneur, a British entrepreneur who I absolutely love. I love him, everything from his ethos to just his missions to his practices. I mean, everything about him. You know, if I can be a quarter of the entrepreneur he is, I'd have a very happy life. And he's a British entrepreneur. You might know him, Simon Squibb.
I don't know.
If you don't Google him, he's all about helping people. He's really about
He's on
people.
LinkedIn a lot, right?
He's
Yeah,
on all
I know
of this.
him.
I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah, yeah.
most everyone's
Yeah,
just
yeah.
seen his stuff, right?
Yep.
But I love watching his stuff. Why? Because he puts people and purpose before profits. People and purpose before profits. And he also focuses on the how. And just like what you said, people and purpose, everything else does not matter in the business. And if you can do that, your profits will follow. And I believe in that.
Yeah. I've got to ask you because I know we're tight on time now
Sure.
but there's a question that I ask every single one of my guests, and that is, what message would you give to your 15-year-old self?
Wow, 15 was a rough year. You know, if I can go back in time, right, and see my 15-year-old self, first of all, I would just reaffirm that life is amazing. Life is beautiful. It's going to have its challenges, but I would say to myself, life is good. That's number one, and don't forget that. And number two, don't lose your character. Don't lose. It's very easy to lose yourself in a startup that is hundreds of billions or millions or whatnot, don't lose your character. Don't lose what makes you really special. And at 15, there were some great qualities that people have at that age. Don't lose that. It's those qualities that will carry you through the hardest times when you're older, in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s. Don't change who you are because of the time period you're in. And that's what I would say to my 15 self.
Nice one. And I gotta ask you this also, is who has been those inspirations that's guided you?
Yeah, I mean, I've had wonderful mentors throughout my life. And I've also learned the biggest lessons for the people who were not good mentors. People who were mean and nasty, and I've learned great lessons from them. But I wouldn't be able to do anything that I am doing now if it actually wasn't for my wife. Yeah. I really owe her a tremendous amount of not only respect and love, but she has guided me and allowed me to do everything that I do here in the Middle East. Like, she's the one that allows me to come back and forth. But it's funny, kind of closing the circle, right? It was her and my in-laws that pushed me to do things that are even better. So, kind of closing the topic, I started with becoming wanting to become a teacher, but I ended being a student because I'm still learning. I'm a student for life. So it's kind of a full circle. So I owe really everything to those mentors, those people who taught me the biggest lessons in business, those fraudsters, the liars, the cheaters. They taught me what not to do and what not to be. And of course, my family.
You are a special, special individual.
Thank you.
And I'm glad that I spent this time talking to you because I hope that I know you for the rest of my life.
And the feeling is so mutual. Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much for having me. It's been such an honor.
Thanks for sharing because I know that you've given so much information to these guys out there that sometimes I want people to understand that you could he's the type of guy that can help those big businesses to guide them to show them the way, but you can always he's continually helping that entrepreneur, that person that's going to start out on their journey, and it comes from here. And that's one thing that I want you to know, that everything that was spoke about today, whether it was from both of us, but mainly from you, it comes from here.
That's right.
And in every one of us, we've got that. Okay. It's whether you utilize it, whether you go out and you make that effort to help somebody today. Thank you so much on that,
Thank you
Rory.
so
Thank you.
much. Thank you for having me, Steve.
It was a fantastic, it was a fantastic podcast for me.
Thank you.
Seriously.
Likewise.
Okay, I've said my piece to camera. I only want to say thank you so much to Workington. Workington, without Workington, I don't think we would have gone to this stage. And believe me, I know where we were and I know where we are today. And I've got to put a lot of that down to a Workington for seeing the potential that we've got. So thank you so much, Workington. And for all of you, thanks for listening today. Thanks for sharing with Ari this message. Go and do something. You've got the capabilities. You haven't got what it takes. It's only going to take persistence and it's only going to take belief. Go and do it. Okay. Anyway, thank you so much for this week. Bye for now.